Mr. Manager.
The next case is 97-2675, Cincinnati Bar Association versus Doris Allen. Ms. Allen.
I'm trying to agree. I pretty much said everything I have to say in my brief that I brought before the court. If there are questions, obviously, I'd be happy to answer them. A couple of things I'd like to point out. First of all, I think we can all agree that this is an extremely serious charge. Essentially, they're charging with subordination of perjury. I don't think that the court can disagree that when you're charged with something that serious, the level of the evidence has to be a certain standard. In this situation, in fact, I find that my circumstance and the Bar Association's circumstance are identical, because the Bar Association drafted a complaint based on statements by Ms. Sylvia Cupp, just as I did. And they found out, when it came to hearing, she hadn't told them the truth. And Mr. Swinsky drafted a complaint based on her remarks in his sworn deposition. At the hearing, she virtually pulled back from every single one of those statements that she made to him, and she got closer to the truth. When she came to me, I believed her, I believed her fear, and I helped her to draft a complaint. On cross-examination, she testified that the facts in the complaint were true. The only thing she argued with was the word arm, and I submit she told me that, but then decided not to tell the arbitrator that she didn't go that far. But she did, in fact, virtually change every word of testimony that she had given Mr. Swinsky in the deposition that he took prior to filing the complaint. That testimony was different than the testimony she gave to the trial judge. Therefore, there's no false affidavit. Then what did I do? Well, they indicate I coerced her. There's absolutely no indication in the record that she was coerced or persuaded. I submit she knew exactly what we were doing. There was testimony taken that she had filed a domestic relations complaint before, that she knew what the paperwork looked like, that she was a literate person, that she was an educated person. All of this is in the record. Now, there was coercion in this case. As I said in my brief, that coercion came from how the prosecutor's office. And I will respectfully suggest to the court that they review State versus Asher. The citation is 112 Ohio App 3rd 646 679 Northeast 2nd 1147 for a full recitation of the practices of the Hamilton County Prosecutor's Office in domestic relations cases. And I think you'll understand that we had an opportunity to review that case that I'm talking about. Now I'll sit down unless there are questions. Yes, ma'am. 112 Ohio App 3rd 646 679 Northeast 2nd 1147 July 17, 1996 from Allen County.
Ms. Huff, I'm sorry, I have a question. The report from the findings and conclusions, maybe this is a typographical error, it says the respondent admits that she did dictate the exact language of the affidavit and that the factors concerning the visit at school, the threats, and that Mr. Harris was armed and or dangerous were at the time of the affidavit untrue.
I didn't admit that. In fact, there are many things, conclusions in that report that are not substantiated by the record. I denied on the record, and I can give you the pages. I said I did not tell her to lie. She told me those things. Yet, I drafted the complaint, just as Mr. Swinsky drafted the complaint today based on the information he was given by her and only by her. And if I put it into the language that was coherent, the way that you do for a client, absolutely, I don't deny that. But did I invent the facts? No, I did not.
So you never...
She testified that I did not.
You never told anyone at all, the judge at the Muni Court or anywhere, that the facts in the affidavit were untrue?
I beg your pardon? I never told anyone.
But did you ever tell anyone that...
No,
that the...
never. I wrote a letter to Mr. Swenke at the first instance, and I said, you know, I don't really remember most of this. But I don't think there was... The guy didn't threat in a way that was, you know, I'm going to beat you up. But it was a threat to her. This woman did not call me once or twice. She called me endlessly. Ms. Ellen, you've got to help me. You're the only lawyer that'll help me. And finally, I said, the only thing I can do for you is vouch for a criminal complaint and you will get a TPO.
Well, then what? I'm confused.
Yes, sir.
What caused the municipal court judge then to do anything about this affidavit?
Because, sir, Ms. Huff testified, and it's all in the record. She testified before the municipal court because she wished to recant. She testified before the judge at that time that I had told her to say all of this and that none of it was true. Then she told Mr. Swenke that some of it was true, but she never told it to me. It's all in my brief. Then at the hearing, she admitted, yes, she came in. Yes, she told me she was afraid. Yes, she brought her children. They were scared to go to school. Yes, 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 and yes. But when she sat before the court, if you read the transcript, which is in the record, she would say, you know, you could get a perjury for this. And the prosecutor says, and the judge says, you've told her that, haven't you? And the prosecutor says, as long as she testifies the way that we talked about, she'll be fine. That's all in the record. And it's in the back of my brief. And at that point, she went ahead and said, oh, my lawyer told me to do it. Now,
this is odd. I mean, we don't read the record before you come here, and we will. So quite often we aren't able to, but what would this panel and this report be so far off in saying that you, respondent, were convinced in your mind that there was something serious in the wind and accordingly wanted to do what you could to protect this family, and you said you probably should not have done this act. You did it and certainly would not do it again. This seems entirely different from what you're telling us today, which is I did none of this.
I wouldn't do the act again because I wouldn't take anybody's word for it that they followed through. Basically what happens is, in Hamilton County, the case that I cited to you involves a situation where a husband and wife were having an argument, and the husband decides to leave, and he says to her, better not be here when I get back, because I can't answer for what I might do. She called the police, and they issued a complaint for domestic violence on a threat. That's the kind of stuff they issued complaints on. Now, this lady had a guy who was just out of the penitentiary, a dangerous guy. She testified he was dangerous. He goes to her children's school and asks the school to give him the kids. And the school calls her and says, we're going to give him the kids. She's hysterical. She's frantic. He's kidnapped the kids before. He's already a bad actor. All of these things. She tells me all of these things. Would I do it again? Would I believe somebody again after this? No. Because after this occurred, she went and told the judge that none of it was true. None of what she told me was true. Then she came to the hearing.
When she told the judge that, who else was present?
The prosecutor and the judge. I mean, we have the transcript here, and I can read it to you.
I was just wondering if the husband was
there. Mr. Swenke interviewed her. I saw Mr. Swenke and said, look, I was not hired, as you say, and, you know, they've done it since I was hired for custody. I was not hired for custody. I was hired for sole purpose of vouching for criminal complaint, and I know that. All right? Now, we had a fee agreement that Mr. Swenke got. I was not working by myself. I was working for a law firm. I was no longer with that law firm. And Mr. Swenke had to petition that law firm for the file. So that came here directly from that law firm. It wasn't something I created. However, it was unsigned. She had to sign that particular copy. But it said clearly at the top, filing a criminal complaint. The retainer was insufficient for a custody battle. There was no way I was hired for custody.
So we will not find in the transcript of page 34 and pages 106 to 107 and page 109 support for the statement in the relator's brief, and Sylvia Huff and Doris Huff both testified that the purpose of the meeting was to seek respondents' assistance from Sylvia Huff to get custody of her children. That's just a flat-out lie?
Basically, they wanted custody because the school was telling them these kids were pretty old. The oldest boy was 10, okay? So these were not kids that were born yesterday, right? The oldest kid was 10, and apparently Ms. Huff had never been a welfare, so there had never been a paternity action filed, and there had never been an establishment of paternity one way or the other, which seems to me that the school should have told the guy to go away. All right, so now she's saying the school says I have to have a custody order. If I don't have a custody order, they're going to give my kids to him because he says he's the father. So she kept shouting she wanted custody, and I kept telling her, I can't do custody. We don't know where he is. She had no address. She knew nothing. She just knew he'd come to the school. Okay? And it's not custody. It's not what lies here. You don't even have a way to serve him.
Well, where's the criminal activity then that you claim you hired to?
She called me up hysterically, frantically afraid. All right? She told me she didn't dare send her kids to school for 2 days. She was terrified he would take them. In the past, he had done things like that before. The fact that he showed up at the school and just asked for the kids was enough for her to feel it was a threat, and she testified to that at the hearing. Just the fact that he appeared, he meant her no good.
What was the vouching that you were to do?
Basically what you do is, if the police won't listen to a person, you can take them down to the Justice Center, which is what we call the jailhouse in Helton County, and then the clerk will take a complaint from you, a criminal complaint, because you as the lawyer vouch that the person is telling the truth. So she signed the complaint, and I signed a paper saying that I vouched for what she said, and that she was legitimate, and that she was entitled to protection from the police because I believed that she was.
Had you represented her before?
No, I had never met the lady before. As I said before, I was working for a firm. They called the firm, and it was just assigned to me. I had absolutely no reason to do anything except try to help this lady. If she hadn't kept calling me frantic and hysterical, telling me I was the only person that could help her, then, by now I should know. But the fact is that I'm being accused of lying on an activist, and we're no lie. I'm being accused of somehow forcing this lady to sign an affidavit. There was no coercion involved. She testified that she was unaware of what was going on. That is incredible on its face. And based on her earlier history, based on her education, I know that I explained it to her. The fact that you explain something to a client 20 times doesn't mean that it's accurate. And when she was faced with having to, when you look at the record and look at the facts and see the history of this relationship that she had with this guy, you'll see that basically she probably was at a point when she was getting along by the time he was arrested, because he called her on the phone and told her he was arrested after she told me she didn't want to know where she was. But she testified that when he was arrested, he called her up. So anyway, I'm going to sit down unless there's more and let Mr. Henn respond.
Thank you, Ms. Allen.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm somewhat amazed by some of the things that Ms. Allen has said. For instance, I will refer to the record of the transcript that the testimony is that her mother called Ms. Allen's office for an appointment, which was made for the next 10 days. Now Ms. Allen says, which is not in the record, that Ms. Huff called her over and over for a long time, crying hysterically. It didn't happen. They only met once, and then went to the library to see if they could find an address, and went to the clerk's office in the Justice Center. Let's put this thing in proper perspective. What had happened is that Dwayne Harris was the father of her children, had been sent to prison for an extended period of time, had come back from thereafter went to the school with Joe Lawrence, had a present for his son's birthday, and wanted to give it to his son. The principal didn't know who this gentleman was, so they called Ms. Huff, who in turn called her mother, who was then went to the school. There was no contact whatsoever between Ms. Huff and Mr. Harris, which will be completed in the record. The principal told Mrs. Huff's mother that something had to be done to establish a legal relationship between these two people, and some custodial rights had to be established by a competent court, because that had never been done. At that point, Ms. Huff's mother picked the law firm out of the yellow pages, called, they assigned the case to Ms. Allen, and an appointment was made the following day. The testimony is replete by Ms. Farrell, Mrs. Huff's mother, who was present with Ms. Huff with the interview of Ms. Allen in her office, Ms. Farrell, present at the clerk's office in the Justice Center when the complaint and the affidavit were drafted, that they were there to obtain custody. Now, how do you obtain custody? Simply, you go to juvenile court. You file a petition for paternity against the defendant. You establish certain procedures. There are a number of ways in which you can find out if this gentleman was on parole. You could have called the parole officer, find out where he lived, got in service, had a hearing. Mr. Harris could have said yes, he could have admitted to paternity.
But the point here is that this lawyer is charged with really lying on an affidavit.
Yes, ma'am.
And so she tells us that, of course, that her clients later in, that the client told her these things and she believed the client. What will we find in the record about that? I take it that the panel did not believe.
That is not true.
Counsel was disbelieved by the panel that's the finder of fact.
It's interesting here, for instance, on page 49 of the transcript, when the first thing that Ms. Allen said when she began to testify, when she was going to cross-examine the witness, she said, "Hi, Ms. Huff. Look, first of all, I'm sorry that you're down here today. I tried to forestall this by getting this over with by saying yes. In fact, I had done something I shouldn't have done." Right there on page 49. Yes, ma'am.
You never
dealt with
domestic violence?
Yes, ma'am.
Did
clients call you up and they change the legend and name your
phrase and then come into your office and change
your mind if they haven't happened? Actually, I've not had that happen.
I've had that happen many times.
Well, what happens usually is that the wife may have court want to recant, but never in my office.
Excellent.
Sometimes they come to court, which is 2 or 3 weeks later, and they've kissed and made up, even sometimes in violation of the TPO, which, you know, they're supposed to stay away from each other.
All right. Did her testimony at the trial, my question is that the transcript
from
the trial itself
is still hearing? It's an exhibit, I believe, yes.
And did that testimony, in fact, differ from the testimony she gave you?
Not to my knowledge. No, she said that Ms. Allen dictated the affidavit word for word, and you have to understand the key phrase, did he threaten me? And that he threatened her, and that had to be ended time because of the school, was not true. Now, there is some confusion in the record that yes, before he went to jail, there had been a prior case in which he had threatened her. But there's absolutely no question that he did not threaten her. And that phrase was important to get a domestic violence complaint.
That's how
contest. He continuously said, I did not go there for domestic violence. It was for custody. She dictated to me what I was to say, and he did not threaten me on that day. It was the day that she never even had any contact with him at the school. I'm sorry, ma'am?
I
Oftentimes we get these, not just in these cases, but others, she said, he said, and we're going back and forth. My only question here is, what would her motive be? Why would she do this? Why would she want to prepare a false affidavit for a court? What would her benefit, her being Miss Allen's benefit? Why would...
I think she was trying to... First of all, let me say this.
You don't get up in the morning and say, I think I'll go lie to the court today. You don't get up in the morning and say, I think I'll go lie to the court today.
I think she was trying to help Ms. Huff, but I think she did it in the wrong way. She could have done the custody rat, but she didn't.
So in order to help her, she made all this up, dictated it, and swore to it in order to help the client.
Actually, as Ms. Allen herself said, there are only two ways you can get a complaint from him in the municipal court, either by referral from a police officer, or the police officer himself signs a complaint, or an attorney's referral, just as she indicated, stating that these facts are correct, and therefore the clerk should issue a complaint so that the defendant can be picked up, and so on and so forth. I think Ms. Allen, but that's the quickest way to avoid the problem. However, didn't solve the problem of the relationship of the parties between themselves in regard to the children. As far as I know, that problem still hasn't been solved. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. There is testimony in the record that subsequently Ms. Huff went to another attorney, and I believe she now has custody.
Do we know whether Mr. Harris did appear at the school with a gun?
No, there was no gun.
We know he did not hear.
We know that he appeared, went to the principal's office. The testimony of Ms. Huff's mother is she spoke to him. And I asked her several times, did he act in any way angry or upset or nothing?
Because the affidavit, apparently, your brief says is that the affidavit alleged he is armed and dangerous, which is a pretty bad thing to say about someone if they're not, in fact, armed and dangerous, I guess.
Well, he wasn't. There's nothing in the record, Your Honor. But let me say this. The position of the Bar Association is that there is certainly some conflicting evidence, but the panel of the board and then subsequently the full board came up with certain conclusions of fact and of law and made a decision with which we are content. We did not file any objections. We believe that the board's decision and conclusion are correct, and we feel that the sanction recommended by the board is appropriate.
Ms. Allen, you've saved almost 2 minutes of your time. Let me ask you, on page 7 of your latest brief, there's this statement that from the transcript apparently, in response to the question of the chairman of the hearing panel, you testified, I know that when we filed that complaint, we were not strictly speaking telling the truth in terms of an actual threat. Yet the affidavit said that Mr. Harris was armed and dangerous. Isn't that not strictly speaking. That's pretty serious.
Let me read you from Ms. Huff's testimony.
Okay, but I'd like you to explain what you meant by that statement.
I'll find the transcript. I will explain it, sir.
Right. This is her testimony at the trial.
Yes. She said he only said he appeared once. The other two witnesses say he appeared more than once. He appeared my son's birthday. I'm sorry, what happened? It was nothing. Did he make a telephone call the second time? Yes, he did. And the only way you knew about that phone call is school contact you could get. And threat me and my three small children. Now, did you understand that was meant to mean that the threat to you and your three small children took place on the 25th and 26th? Or did you think that meant threats to you and your children took place at any time? I thought it meant took place at any time. All right. Because like I said, I expressed to her, meaning me, how he was abusive to me in the past. All right. And so the phrase, that threatened me and my small children, was true in your own mind when you signed this affidavit to the witness? Yes. And then the affidavit indicates the defendant is armed and dangerous. Did you believe that to be true? The witness, no, I did not. So you never felt at any time he was armed and dangerous? I felt he was dangerous, but not armed. She told me he was armed. But, you know, she changed everything. I felt he was dangerous. So it boiled down to you didn't think he was armed, but you signed the affidavit anyway. Right. And finally, the last sentence says, I fear for my children's safety, they're afraid to attend school. Was that true in your mind at the time? Yes. Now, her remarks to Mr. Swenty in the deposition that he took were, did you tell Miss Allen they're afraid to attend school? I never told Miss Allen that. That's just how I felt. Now, at the court, you understand you testified today in a different way that it constituted a crime of perjury. Do you understand that? It's a serious offense. Now, the United States Constitution provides the right of the United States to testify in a way that can incriminate in another offense. Do you understand that? This means you do not have to testify. Do you want to continue to testify? Does the state have any intention of prosecuting this witness? No. After the information she supplied to me on the fire date, I spoke to Terrence Crossroads,